Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel's
beating it! Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Rusty, how are you? You're back in LA?
Yeah, I'm good. I just got back yesterday.
There you go. So this is another episode of The Suspendables, the world-breaking, world-record-setting podcast that's been coming at you for... Well, I'll tell you what, we got a guest coming on, and it's Rick Tocchet. I met Rick back in Phoenix for the first Gretzky Fantasy Camp, and I fell in love with him right away when we were in the hot tub, and he gave me a fucking wedgie, okay, when I was in the hot tub. I said, welcome to the big league, kid, okay? And then he came on, every time I asked him to do the radio show, he said, yep, anytime. I felt like I was his best friend when we talked for, 10 minutes. And then I always try and give a guy a heads up. What do you want to talk about? And he always go, whatever you want. Whatever you want, Jimmy, bring it on. And he's our guest this week. How are you, Rick? Nice to see you there, buddy. Are you lying down right now? Or can you sit up?
Yeah, I'm sitting up on the bed here, just relaxing. I know, I want to be nice and calm here during this segment. I know, and I've known you for a lot of years. Rusty, I go way back with that guy. He's both legends here. And I just like to say, I guess I'm the 70th guest. Thanks so long. Thanks, boys. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Fuck,
Kelly Chase beat me to the, yeah, the punch.
Yeah, I don't talk to. I'll come on your show anytime. I said, let me get a couple under my belt, and then we'll bring you on. So that was 69 shows ago.
Thanks.
Yeah, you were high on the list, man. You were high on the list.
I hear you, boys.
Anyway, thanks for coming on, man. It's great to catch up with you again, and congratulations on making the playoffs. If you've been living under a rock, Rick's been coaching Phoenix for the last couple of years. At least, is it 3 years now, talk, or two? You two?
3 years.
Three years under your belt.
3 years.
I'm going to read you some of your stats, okay?
Oh, boy, here we go.
Okay. Russ always loved this one because it gives me a chance when I read another guy's stats. It's another guy who's won a Stanley Cup, but he hasn't yet. You see, so he gets...
Here we go.
So, Ricky, you got to pick one. You got to pick one of your... You got to pick your favorite stat here, okay? I'm going to list off a bunch, okay?
Okay.
18 seasons in the NHL. Philly, Pittsburgh, LA, Boston, Washington, Phoenix, back to Pittsburgh. So I'm doing the math. That's about a team a year. Okay. Is that enough teams you went with? Okay. Head coach in Tampa. Drafted 121st. Okay. Overall in the sixth round. Four-time NHL All-Star. Big fights. Okay. Tough guy. Wendell Clark and Cam Neely. Retired in 2001-02. With 2,000 penalty minutes, 400 goals, played for St. Michael's College. I'll tell you what's weird about that high school. My old man, Rusty, played for St. Michael's when he was growing up.
King or your dad?
That's our first inside joke, I think. And you Team Canada. I was talking to you earlier, and then no Olympics, right? No Olympics. But three Team Canada. Okay, 87, the big one.
No. 91 was.
91. I told you I was with Rusty.
No, because you guys, 87, 90, and 91, and of course the big one. So what do you like their talk when you hear all that shit? Okay, all that dribble. What do you like the best when you hear about it?
It was the Gretzky European tour, friends tour. Hey, Rusty.
Oh, we had so much fun.
We could get into that, but that was, that's where now. Actually, it's funny because I might have had, I think I had 444 goals. But I think I played with Rusty. I think I would have had 600. That trip, I forget who put us together. Gretz put me, Rusty, and Stevie Eiserman together. And it was like, I think I had 9 goals in 4 games. I said, Rusty was unbelievable. I always knew he was a really good hockey player, fast, underrated passing guy, but holy geez, did he feed me. It was sick, that trip. We had a great time.
It was so funny because they put us together and they said, Russ, will you play left wing? And I'm like, with who? And he goes, Rick Tocchet and Steve Eisenman. And I go, fucking right, so I'll play left wing. And we clicked so well together.
Oh my God.
And every time I would give Rick a pass and he'd score, when guys come in and congratulate and high five, he would say, you got to get fucking traded to my team, man. We got to play together when we get this. It was so much fun, but we just clicked on and off the ice. Rick and I, ever since we first met, years after we were playing against each other, we just hit it off. And you never know when you meet somebody that you've played against for years. You just don't know if you're going to click. And the first day we met, I mean, we clicked and we've had so much fun over the years. We don't see each other a lot, but when we do, it's just you pick up right where you left off. And anyways, that trip, we played really well together. We had a lot of fun.
Didn't you say, right, you weren't sure what the schedule was? This is during the lockout. So Gretz threw this whole thing together. You're going over to Russia to play. And everyone gets all whipped up one night, right? They all get together. They have a bunch. And then you didn't realize you guys had to play the next day and everyone was hungover like shit and you had to get on there and play.
there was a lot of those nights, trust me.
That was every night.
And I got to tell you, Rusty, like, you know, he led the charge. And I'll tell you what, this guy on 3 hours sleep, you know, he four assists, one goal, three, you know, like you got Messi and these guys, you know, they're like, you know, one assist. Rusty's getting 5 points a night, getting 2 hours sleep. Amazing. He was, I'm serious.
The jet lag. I couldn't sleep because of the jet lag.
That's what it was. That's it. No. Rusty, that's it. I forgot. No. I got to start using that one.
No. And wasn't Coco in net? Grant Fear, wasn't he your goaltender?
Yeah.
That trip?
Yeah. One of our first games over, we went to, I think we started in Norway, and then we went to Sweden or Finland. Can't remember which. And then I think our first game or our second game, we got 16 shots against and 0-4. And Fearsy calls over Gretz and goes, tell the boys I'm warm.
I will tell you this, though, Rusty, if you remember, we had a blast in the room. That's the one thing, guys, nowadays. And listen, the kids are great nowadays. I love coaching these guys. But I just remember the room. Like, that's the stuff I miss. And Rusty will tell you. And, you know, the joking around, you know, getting ready for the game, but just the energy in the room. I miss that. I miss that whole thing. And, you know, Rusty was big with that. But I remember we were playing Norway and we weren't doing anything out there. Norway was, I think they were beating us 1-0 after the second period or something. And then you remember wrestling, Messi stood up and said, hey boys, we're fucking Canada here.
He lost it on us.
Oh, no way.
Oh, he lost it on us. And I kind of like, I thought it was pretty cool because it's like, hey, as much as a friend tour, we don't lose to Norway.
Brett Hall went out in the second period and started blocking shots.
Yeah. When Brett Hall blocks shots, you know, serious.
Who else was on that squad?
It was Messier. It was Rusty. Who was it? Well, Marty McSorley, Rob Blake,
McGinnis, Coffey, Holly Lerms, and then we had Hack. What was Hack? Conacher, Tony Granato,
Stevie Eisenman.
What a team!
Stevie Eisenman. Fedorov. Fedorov. Yeah. How can we forget?
And
Holly.
Yeah.
And that's probably where Marty said, I should be the captain of all these guys.
You know, oh, my Marty. God. Marty.
Well, listen, I don't know if I could. I can't. Rusty had the best lines against Marty. I'll tell you why I loved Rusty. Rusty went at him a couple times with some great jabs, and the whole room just went like bananas. It was hilarious. But I remember we were playing Finland, and I think we were down a goal.
Yeah.
And, you know, Messier's out there, Gretzky, Coffey, Larmer, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, I don't know, Rusty, you're beside me or whatever. And Eisenman's on the ice. I turned to one of you guys and go, fucking Marty's on the ice. How did he get out there? And I said to the trainer goes, he just hopped over. I couldn't do anything about it. He just hopped over. And he's out there when we pulled the goalie. He went for the goalie. Well, you remember Rusty?
Yeah. Oh my God. Oh my God. Marty ripped me in front of all the, you know, he rips everybody, right? So when Marty's in the room, the one thing I learned is you got to have thick skin. And I kind of knew going in, And he ripped me. We were somewhere, and he said, yeah, Montreal traded you for a dead guy, John Kordick, who passed away after, right? Like two years after. And I said, everyone's like, Marty, that's low. And I go, yeah, Marty, you were a throw-in with the Gretzky trade because somebody had to carry Wayne's freaking bags to and from the airport.
No, but Jimmy, this is the best. This is the best. We're out there. You know, Marty's given to me, and all of a sudden it's quiet for whatever reason. You know, whenever guys are taping the sticks, and all of a sudden you hear Rusty in the corner. Hey, Slats, it's 10-0. You think I can play now? I never laughed so hard in my life. I miss those days.
And you, just so everybody knows, Marty and I are like, we're all friends, right?
Oh, of course.
I talked to Marty five times last week. He's trying to go up to Gaza. So that's how it works. Yeah. I mean, we all had to have thick skin, and
exactly.
and it's give and take. And it's just like, that stuff that Rick's talking about is the fun stuff. I remember, Rick, you'll remember when Cam Neely tried to come back after after he retired.
Yes.
He was there for a week and he called me. I don't know if he called you too, Rick, because I know we're all really good friends. And Cam calls me, he goes, I forgot about all the bullshit that goes along with playing. I remembered all the good stuff. I didn't remember all the crap. He goes, the therapy, the this, the that, the meetings. And he goes, oh my God, I forgot about all that stuff.
Yeah.
We got to give Marty kudos because to tell you how fast, how ripping quick-witted Marty is. Quick. And we've told the story before, but it's a classic. Because Rick, you were in the room. Rusty, you were in the room. And it was... And Marty's getting up, screaming and yelling about all the great, Marty, there'd be like Mario, Brett Hall, Rick, Stevie Eiserman around. And then Marty would start to tell these guys how they should play, right? Okay, Marty was great, right? And anyway, he gets up in the room, in the players' room, and all the guys are at the fantasy camp. And then he's screaming about how he did this, and he scored this goal, and he went high left on that goaltender and shit like that. And Eddie Mio's sitting there, who had just come off the ice from a 6-minute shift, looking like he's going to die, okay? Old furnace face, we called him. And then Eddie finally, he would never get in these verbal joustings, man. Eddie didn't like him, And then finally Eddie, after 6 years straight of the fantasy camp, he jumps up after Marty's going on and on. He goes, I'll tell you what, McSorley, you never scored on me. And Marty in 1 second goes, I never shot at the bench. So, Marty, we got to give Marty his due, man.
And he said that to Gretz.
Great. Oh, yeah.
He goes, Eddie says to Wayne, he goes, Wayne's telling these two caddies from Sherwood how many goals he scored. They asked him the question, and Eddie's in the foursome. Yeah. They go, who'd you score the most goals against? What goalie? Because they're playing with Eddie, and they're curious. So, frickin' Gretz knows how many goals he scored against every goalie. In his entire career, it's unbelievable. Yeah. And he goes from top to bottom. And then when he gets halfway through, one of the caddies goes, well, how many did you get against Eddie? And Eddie goes, four, before Wayne could answer. And he goes, yeah, but I only played against you once.
Once. Poor Eddie, man.
A reminder, the Suspendables are engaged on Facebook. Your comments are welcome always.
We've never had a guy on who actually had to play in that freaking bubble. It was so weird because you're in my backyard. I'm in Edmonton where I live.
Yeah.
And I've heard like a lot of really tough stories. I think Bones speaking of nicknames, is Bones the guy, Rick Bones?
Yeah, Rick Bones.
You call him Bones?
Yeah, Bonesy. Yeah, Bonesy. Yeah.
Anyway, he was knocked out by it. He went on a press conference. And how was that, Rick, playing in that thing?
Well, you know what? It's 2.5 blocks. Jim, that area. They have a fence around it. So,
yep.
And they have like a courtyard. It's not a big courtyard. So you didn't have a lot of outdoor time. So I knew after the first week or two, it was going to be tough on some guys. Listen, I got a lot of respect for Tampa and Dallas and, the other teams that went far. For the mental toughness, it's Groundhog Day every day. Every day you do the same thing. You go to practice, same restaurant, and you're in your room. you know, listen, how could, you know, it's hard for people to complain. I mean, there's people have it worse than us, but I could tell some guys were getting a little bit stir crazy. So I have a lot of respect for those teams that did it. I actually did a video. We beat Nashville, and I did a, or I think it was before game four during the day. Carolina did this video of the family, you know, wish them luck and all, we miss you. And I did that with our team, and a couple of guys broke down and started crying. One guy had to, I'm not going to mention him, had to leave the room. He was upset.
Wow.
Yeah, because his kid, he hasn't seen his kids. You know, yeah, some guys haven't seen their kids in, you know, the two-year-old kid or three-year-old kids in 6 weeks. So, it was tough. But like I said, I got a lot of respect for those teams that went far.
A lot changes with those young kids, Rick. I watched Tampa get off the plane, and I couldn't believe how many little kids ran up
yes.
to the players, you know, 2-3 months away from those kids.
Yeah.
You know, that's a long time in their lives, those little two-year-olds and
three-year-olds. Yeah, you know, I mean, I think a couple of guys, Rusty, sorry to interrupt you, that they missed their son or, you know, their little son walking. They missed that, month,
yeah.
you know, like, you know, things like that. So I thought the NHL did a great job. You know, nobody got the virus in that whole thing. I don't know how many times you got tested. By the way, I've been tested about 70 times. That nasal thing, the long one. it's like putting four Q-tips together glue them together and stick them down your nose. I'm glad I have to do that for a while. Oh man, for about a month, you have to drive the Mayo Clinic and they have a drive-through. So we'd have to do it like 3-4 times a week. And there's lane one and lane two. And I remember this one older nurse. You didn't want her because she was tough. She stuck that thing in like she didn't care. But then you have some other nurses that are really good. So, you know, I'd be in line, you know, the way I am, Rusty and Chichester. I'd be like, you know, Phil Housley is behind me. He goes, hey, which lane? You got to go to two. Then 10 minutes later, I get a text. Fuck you. You get anxiety, man. I'm telling you, going to that thing. Some of those things, so you get the wrong person, you get the anxiety. You know, that it goes up the wrong pipe there. You know,
I got anxiety now, man. Jesus. You were saying, Rick, we talked a week ago or so.
Yeah.
You were saying maybe, though, that during that bubble, they could have maybe done something a little different. Because one of the problems is they never let you go anywhere. Obviously, a bubble, go outside.
Yeah.
And then one day you had an hour or two, you were allowed to walk around Commonwealth Stadium. And you said, fuck, why don't they do that the whole time? Right.
Well, what's that big practice rink there? Have there? They have 4 or 5 sheets. Really nice. I don't know where that is, Jimmy. You probably know where the rink there in Edmonton is. It's 4 or 5 sheets of ice. Beautiful, actually, facility. I don't know where it is. Like 20 minutes from downtown. But there's a nice, beautiful park next door. Like gorgeous. Like trees, right. Big, huge field. And we'd have to stay in the building. We couldn't go, you know, we had to go from the rink to the bus, right? So you couldn't go outside. And I remember there's a glass there, and I used to watch, you know, people on the grass and stuff. And I felt like Shawshank Redemption. I felt like I can't get outside that fence. I just want to go feel my feet on that grass. And this was like the month into it. So, yeah, I wish they would have let, like, at least like once in a while, each team have a park day. You know, you go to the park. That was the only thing I thought. And maybe some more food trucks, some good, you know, Edmonton cuisine or some good more food trucks. That was the only thing Mike only complained. But other than that, it was good. It was good.
What did you do with your team then? I mean, as a coach, you must have been, like, especially when you saw signs of guys starting to get depressed almost. How did you handle the evenings and shit? Are you all eating together or what? How did it work?
Well, you know, guys went in groups. We had a couple of team meals. So, and then the guys were playing. They had golf simulators all over the place. So guys were doing that or they were playing poker or something like that. So, you know, the guys were trying to do stuff. I know, like, Vegas and a couple other teams really were creative. They had movie night. A guy used to pick something. So they were really creative. It was more like just, you know, card games and stuff those guys were doing.
Well, let's give you a chance here to talk about your team. Well done, right? You beat you knock off Nashville, right, in that playoff round. Yeah. Then you come up against a buzzsaw, right, in Colorado. But let's hear you brag about your team. Do you like what's happening, or what needs to be done, or are you staying the course, or what?
Well, it's funny because I was back here. I played here in 2000. I coached with Wayne, and then I'm back here again. So it's a market that's starving for a winner. You know, making the playoffs or, you know, get invited to the play and winning that round is big for this franchise. It's been like 10 years. So we got to move forward now. You know, we can't go backwards. We got some young guys that that I had, you know, I got when they were 18, 19, and now they're 21. So I'm looking for them to take a big step. We got a hell of a goalie, Darcy Kuemper. He's the face of our franchise. So, you know, we're a work in progress, but I thought, you know, every year we've improved. So we'll see what happens this year. I enjoy coaching these guys. They're good guys and they want to win.
So when you got into the coaching ranks, did you have an idea of how you're going to coach? Is it totally different now with these kids than when you played, Rick?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, and Rusty will tell you, you know, Rusty played for a Pat Burns. I played for a Mike Keenan. You know, we both love the great guys, but you know, they used to tell you, hey, do this, you better do it. Like, there's no why, coach. Yeah, they're tough. You know, hey, go in there, get that, you know, do this or do that. You just said, yes, sir, right? But nowadays, you have to explain to the player, like, okay, here's the reason why. You know, we want to do this because of this and this and that. Because kids are smart. You know, they want to know the answers. They want the answers to the questions, you know. But the one thing, and I'll tell you, I didn't want to change, though. I always wanted to be the same coach. Even though I was an assistant coach in Pittsburgh, I didn't want to be all of a sudden a head coach, you know, be that head coach that, you know, doesn't talk to the players. You know, if you have a bad game the next morning, don't say good morning. I hate that. I hate coaches. I want to be consistent. And that's what I try to do. And communicate with the player. Be honest. You know, Rusty, you chime in.
Yeah.
All we want is honesty, and I try to give that to the players. You know, sometimes they don't want to hear it, but they rather hear it than play mind games.
The worst thing was when you played with a guy and then all of a sudden he's a coach and he's now a complete fucking idiot and he's a tyrant when he wasn't, and he's acting tough when he wasn't. And I think consistency with, like Rick saying, he's the same person he was when he played. He demanded what he demands probably out of his players is what he demanded out of himself, which is great fitness, because Rick was always super fit. And a respect for the game and respect for the team you're playing against, and be the best you can be, but don't be somebody you're not. And so when you run into some of these guys, these coaches that along the way through our careers, and then watching some of the guys coach after, and you just shake your head and you're like, what are they doing? And you know, it's easier to be yourself than be somebody else, because when you're not being yourself, you're acting, and then you're going to trip up, and you're going to trip up, and people are going to figure it out. When they figure it out, they're going to stop playing. So
you're right, Rusty. And they'll see right through you.
Yeah.
If you start acting and you start doing that crap, they know it, and then you lose the room. So you try to be as honest as possible. For sure.
Yeah. And I think Jim, I would say is that, like, when I played with Mark Messier, he included every player on that team. And when you're coaching or you're the captain or the leader, whatever, you want to make sure that every person in that room feels like they're part of the team, because there's some guys that don't play a lot and there's the guys that play a lot. And you gotta make sure that everybody's getting along and they feel like whatever they're doing is really important to the team. And Mark, as a captain, did that better than anybody. I mean, he was unbelievable. We looked up to Gretz, and we looked up to Mess and Larry Robinson and, you know, Bob Gainey. But man, oh man, Mark made every guy in that room feel like they were as important as the best player in the room.
Talk, what do you find the toughest part about coaching then? I mean, you were such a successful player on all levels. You know, when you read these stats of yours, right? You know, not only was, and Russ always talks about one of, you know, great players in the NHL were guys who would back up being tough, and you for sure were the number one guy there. So you, as a player, you went under that coaching thing, but now you're a coach in a different era. What's the hardest thing? I mean, there's a million things to like, talk, but what do you hate about it? Well, we don't use the word hate. Sorry, Russ. What don't you like about it?
Well, I'll tell you what, as a player, you have to understand a player. Like, you preach, it's about the team. Rusty, he'll say the same. I'm all about the team, like team. But we also, as a player, have your own agenda too. And you, as a coach, you can't discount that. Some guys, you know, they have different agendas too. And you have to understand it as a coach. So the hardest part for me is telling a guy he's not playing, or, you know, benching a guy. And not for sake, the guy's not playing well. It's just you got a gut feeling. You got to go with somebody else. You might have to shorten the bench. And it might happen a bunch. And you can just tell, like, some guys take it well, some guys don't. And you try to explain to guys, it's not personal. It's all about the team. So I think that's the hardest thing for me, because, you know, there's some really good guys that, you take ice time away for what, you know, for whatever reason, and you could feel like some guys feel like they're failing, and it's not a failure. It's just, it's a team thing. And that's the hardest part. And you try to explain to guys, you know, you try, I mean, I went through it. So I don't want to be a hypocrite. You know, I used to get pissed off at a coach when I didn't play, but you know, the only difference now, I want the guy to get it off his chest, come and talk to me about, let's discuss it, at least to get some common ground. I think that's the hardest part as a coach, is trying to find that.
What you coached under Wayne.
Yeah.
As an assistant. And we people don't talk about it too much, about Gretz's, about his coaching days there. What was that like, talk? Because I know it was new ground. The sense I got when I first met you and you were coaching with him is, that Gretz was leaning on you quite a bit to help out there. Well, what was it? What was that whole thing like?
Yeah. So Wayne, we didn't have a good team. I'll tell you what, like, we didn't have a good team, but, and we didn't, but you know what? We were 500 that year. And I'm telling you, Gretz, he was really good behind the bench. Like he, you know, myself or, Alfie Samson, when he was there, or Barry Smith did the practice, Wayne would come out and do the practices, but we would run that. But when it came to the bench, he was really good behind the bench. He was very generous. He was really good to the guys. But that year, and then there was another part of the year that those, he was doing really well. So I think he enjoyed it.
The only mistake that Rick made, was he ran out of ink when he was filling out the, lineup sheet.
Yeah, I got some really good Gretz stories, but Gretz goes, I want you to fill out the lineup sheet, right? And I go, oh, I hate to. I said, okay, if I do it, every coach has to take a look at it and okay it. He goes, yeah, no problem. So we're playing the LA Kings, and I put Peter Nedved down, and I didn't put Freddie Sjustrom. Well, Nedved was hurt, so the game's about to start, and the ref comes up and goes, hey, Gretz, Peter, you got Nedved, and he's not here. You got Sjustrom. Sjustrom can't play, so we're going to have to play with one short. So the camera's on the bench, and Wayne does the old look around to me. Like, he just kind of looks at me the whole bit, like, you know, like death stare, right? And I'm like, under my breath, going, you asshole prick. I was so pissed off. And I go, I told, like, everybody looked at it. So anyways, the long short of it, we had to play the whole game with that extra guy. You know, we had some fun times, though. I mean, quick, I think I might have told you guys a story. Your fans are love. So we were kind of in a funk, and I go, Wayne goes, how do we loosen the guys up? And I go, Wayne, just, you know, joke around the bench a little bit more. So the national anthem starts, and we're in Detroit. And remember Russell, I forget who used to sing back the day there, but the lady was pretty, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So Wayne goes, she comes out, and as she's singing, Wayne goes on the bench, hey, guys, if we win to this game, the guy that scores the game winner, I'll get you a date with her. I think it was a blonde girl. I forget the girl. So all the guys are laughing, chuckling. We beat Detroit. You know, Detroit was way better. We beat Detroit, right? So we go into Dallas. And Dallas, you know, they always have some really good-looking national anthem singers. And so I hit Gretz on the shoulder. Gretz, you got to do it again. You know, superstition. So Gretz goes, hey, guys, I'll get you this girl if somebody scores a game winner. We beat Dallas. So...
Nice.
So now we're now on a roll, right? So now we go back home. So now the game starts. We're at home now. So all of a sudden, ladies and gentlemen, who's going to sing the national anthem for the Phoenix Coyotes is Paulina Gretzky.
So she comes out there.
So she goes out there, and then all of a sudden I go, oh, Wayne, what does the guy with the game winner get? He turns at me, he goes, no way, boys, no way. It was actually pretty funny. It kind of, but I got to tell you, that's the sort of stuff that you got to, you know, you loosen players up. Sometimes they play better. And Wayne had that knack to loosen guys up. It was funny.
Well, especially around Wayne. I mean, I don't care who you are. When he walks in a room, everybody just goes, oh, my God, there's Wayne Gretzky. I mean, the guy has the effect on people that the Stanley Cup has.
You'll know this is a classic. Remember we went to Nevis, Rusty?
We went to Nevis near St. Kitts. Wayne and Janet planned this trip for Rick.
We're on the beach, and there's this hut, and this guy with this Rastafarian guy, right? And he was there cooking food. The guy was unbelievable. And Rusty and we were drinking. Remember Carib? Remember the beer? It's called Carib. So me and Rusty, we're knee deep in the Caribs and stuff. And this guy's got the smoke on, and you know, he's doing all the stuff. And Wayne starts going, hey, where are you guys? And we told him, we're in this hut. Come on over and have some beers. he walks in, and the guy goes, "Oh wait, that's Wayne Gretzky." Remember, like he said it, like yeah. we're in a resort, like it took us like 14 hours in a jungle to get there, and the guy knew Wayne Gretzky. Remember, Rusty?
Yeah,
oh I was just God. Amazed. He goes, "You're nuts. Wayne Gretzky," and it was awesome. It was awesome.
Oh, it was so good.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a trip that was. We had so much fun. It was so we played golf every day. The girls hung out by the pool, did spa treatments, and we'd play this golf course, and this drink cart girl would come around, and it was so freaking hot there. It was in November, I think it was. And we were locked out. So it's Paul and Rick against Wayne and I. And we're freaking playing it was some pretty high stakes games. And, and we're playing this three putt, the snake game. So we're drinking the Caribs. We're having a great time.
Right.
We're on 18 and we're up on the bet. We're down on the snake.
The snake. Yeah.
And Gretz snap hooks it into the bushes. I'm on my own. And he's like, "I'm sorry, Rusty." So I'm on the green in two or three or something, but I forgot about the bet.
Oh no.
Like I was thinking about, I was thinking about the bet and I forgot about the snake. And Rick goes, "Say, Rusty, you got to sink that 25 footer or you own the snake." And the snake would have went double. It doubles every time.
You're into a G note here.
It was
for
at
sure.
$1,200.
$1,200. Oh yeah.
But it went to $2,400, and I freaking drained it. I was like, "Oh my God, the snake!"
And he made the putt. And I remember, like,
I made the putt. Oh my God!
I'm going awesome putt, like unbelievable putt. Grats. Oh my God! You know, it's a great putt. You got to give the guy credit. Paul Coffey. He's mad. Sure. He just storms off the green. Remember? He's all mad.
He was so pissed off.
Oh, my God.
But we ended up, I think we ended up washing because otherwise. I think Wayne and I would. I think because of that, you guys owned the snake. Then you guys won the bet or the press or something. Anyways, we all broke even. And we had so much fun on that trip.
It was a great trip. It was a really good trip. Yeah.
I went from there to the 3-on-3 tournament in Toronto. And I showed up, and all the guys are pale white, you know, because it's November, I think. And then they had this 3-on-3 tournament in Hamilton. And it was the Western Hockey League against the Americans, the Ontario Hockey League, and the Quebec League. They put four teams together. They had this little all-star team. And I won't roll in with frickin' a sunburn. I'm out of shape. And Ray Bork goes, "Where have you been?" I go, "I was just in Nevis with Gretz," and he just walked away shaking his head.
Russ walks in, everybody's calling him the Hoff. He looked like David Hasselhoff. You know, he's got the nice tan. He's got, you know, he's all tanned up and all these guys are white. Oh yeah, it was hilarious.
Who are the best nicknames talk when you played? Some of the stuff you came up with, guys, we've talked about. I wish I would have started writing them down, Rusty.
Well, I'm not going to mention the guy's name, but Marty McSorley named this guy in L.A. two people.
Oh,
and so they're all calling him two people. And someone says, why do you call him two people? He goes, "Because one person couldn't be that stupid."
It's mostly like
I'm talking Rusty. Kevin Stevens, Artie, you know, what are they still called? Mass Moose, you know, like Mass Moose.
Yeah.
You know, Gretz has a bunch of different ones. Mario, they call, we call Mario, sometimes you call him Ace. Dick, they call me Dickie. I mean, there's so many different nicknames. Like,
why Dickie?
Well, that's Paul Coffey. Like, Richard, he just said Dick, and then he started calling me Dickie. So it's just stuck with Dickie. I don't know. Coffey used to call me Dickie. I room with him in the Canada Cup, so. That was a beautiful time, that guy. Oh my God. Rusty knows him really well. Oh God.
Yeah. Cough is great.
Yeah.
Hey, Dickie, do you remember this in Scottsdale? We're at the Oceans, Mastros.
Yeah.
So we're at Mastros and I'm sitting at the table beside you. You're with Cough and two other guys. And it's during the fantasy camp at Gretz's.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I walked up to the table to Cough and I said, "Hey, I heard something about your kids wanted to go and be you for Halloween, but they couldn't, you know, it was the they had every uniform on and it was too heavy and they're too hot. And I was making a joke about how many teams he played in Halloween, and he turned around and he goes, Russ, any fucking guy can say that to me, but you can't, fuck you. He started laying into me, right? And he did it for, it felt like 5 minutes, but it was probably a minute. And then he goes in cough fashion, just kidding. And I raised my arms up. I had the full sweat going. I thought he was dead serious. I kept saying, he looked at me deadpan, just ripping me. And I'm like, cough, I'm kidding. It's a joke. On, cough. And I was sweating. I had to go change my shirt.
But he was cheap. He was really good, but he was cheap. He was close to the dollar, cough. Guy never spent a fucking dime on anyone. He was just you must have played with him in Pittsburgh.
No. I got actually traded for him. I didn't tell you that story.
No, I'm going to hear it.
So I'm with Philly, cough with Pittsburgh. He calls me up like late at night, 12:30 at night. And I'm lying in bed. He goes, fuck. He goes, I got traded to fucking LA. I go, and now I'm going, fuck, it's not that bad. Because he loved Pittsburgh, right? LA's not bad. It's a great place to play. You know, Gretz is there, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm trying to, you know, whatever.
Pump him up,
right? And then he goes, so we're talking or whatever. And he goes, oh, I got to go. He goes, I go, who'd you get traded for? By the way, you. Because it was a three-way deal. and Jim, no, he hangs the phone up. I got to go. Hangs the phone up. I'm sitting in my bed, right? I got traded. Nobody's told me. So I'm trying to call around. Finally, I think it was Craig Patrick calls me like 10, 20 minutes later. So for 20 minutes, I didn't know I got traded because, you know, it's not like the internet back then. Like you can go on and find out.
Right.
So yeah, that's true. That's cough fashion. I got traded for you. All right, got to go. And he hangs the phone up.
Talk about the 87 Canada Cup. Everyone in Canada, they always know where they were when Paul Henderson scored in 72. And they all know where they were when Gretz to Lemieux. Were you on the ice, talk?
No, I was on the bench, buddy. I was on the bench. I had a goal and assist that game. Come on, give me something.
Attaboy! What line were you on that?
I was with that. Everybody.
Yeah, that's like Keenan just mixes it up.
You got to remember that when Mike picked that team, I mean, Yzerman and Nate, like a bunch of guys got cut. And he wanted it. Like he kept myself. Like, listen, obviously biased because I played for him. Any of those other guys could have played. But he wanted to get guys that if they had to sit for 10 minutes, they wouldn't complain. And if they went out there, they could just go and forecheck. So that was it. But on that goal, God rest his soul, Dale Hawerchuk made it unbelievable. He wins the draw. Makes a hell of a play in the neutral zone. He was Dale Hawerchuk. Just what a unbelievable. I passed in a way there a couple months ago, and I had memories of him. He was so good to me there because the great Dale Hawerchuk was playing, but he played a third and fourth line role in that series. You know, that whole series, and he never complained. Yeah. And look what he did. You know, the game winning goal. Like he was incredible.
And he won MVP of the tournament too.
And he won MVP of that game. I think it was the game.
Okay.
Russie was really good. Like
He's a great man.
And it's just that's why you know what I don't see Russie as much or you Jimmy whatever you cross paths and it's good to have these memories, man. That's the one thing we can always take is memories with us. You know, seeing guys. You know, because I haven't seen Howie in a lot of years, and he was going through all that stuff, and it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Well. Russ has always said that the thing about hockey is and he mentioned it earlier, you know, it's like you, when I met you for 10 minutes, I came home, I told my wife, my ex-wife, I said, I met the greatest fucking guy in the world. I met the greatest guy in the world. I feel like I'm his best friend, but you guys are like that with all the hockey players, man. It's before we let you go talk, we got to talk about fighting.
Yeah.
I remember Dave Semenko, God rest Semenko's soul,
yes.
You know, when one of the crazy things that people, they still don't believe it, but it's true. Semenko told the story about how did you get into fighting? He said, I got on the bench and the coach told me to go punch a guy in the head. And I said, okay, I can try that. And it might've been I don't even think it was in junior. He might've been playing pro and he went and punched the guy in the head and knocked him out and said, is that what I was supposed to do? You know? And he never talked. He was never in a fight in high school. He was never in a bar fight. He was never got in a fight with his brothers or any of his family members or buddies. He never fought until he played pro hockey. And he didn't know that was going to be his role.
Yeah.
And you always kind of had that handle, and yet we read these other stuff. I mean, fuck, you were a good player. You were good. This just in. The Quebec Junior Hockey League this week is talking about phasing out fighting. I think the first thing they're going to do is make it effectively a 15-minute penalty. Like if you get a 5-minute major, and then they're going to slap you with a 10-minute one. And then talking about, I forget exactly, if you get in 3 fights, you're going to start to get suspended. So what you were a fighter back in the day where you had to be a fighter. Talk about that.
Well, I think, you know, back then it's part of the game, the intimidation, you know, like, I wasn't never into the stage fighting. You know, listen, have I ever got off the draw to start of the game to get your team going? Absolutely. But the stage stuff I didn't like. I think that's the stuff that they really wanted to get away with. I'm not sure, and, you know, you could ask Rossi and the Gretzky, you know, Weir. I don't think those guys want that out of it either. I think you have to have somewhat that ability in case, you know, listen, we're a sport that has a stick in your hand, right? It's a very aggressive sport. I think you have to have an outlet. If somebody does get out of hand with his stick or takes liberties on some serious players, I think you have to have that ability. It's, you know, we don't have that type of team. You know, I think part of the game, you have to have that somewhat guy that can be able to do it every once in a while. But can play the game. You know, you can't have a guy sits a bench and plays 13, 14 minutes. Like Dave Semenko was tough as nails, but he could also play. And very honest guy. I mean, I would love to imagine having Dave Semenko now. I mean, he can play 10, 12 minutes. He'll knock your head off. And he's an honest guy. So I still think there's room for those type of guys.
So you're okay with the fighting? You're not talking about getting rid of it then? You don't want
I don't think so. I mean, listen, I understand where the game's going, but I think there is some element of that has to be there. If you can do both, I don't think you can be one-dimensional and play in the NHL anymore.
One of the toughest guys I ever played with and one of the toughest guys in the league at that time was Wendell Clark. And Philly came into Toronto, and I didn't know Rick at the time. I mean, our careers were just starting, and Wendell was, I think, in his rookie year. And they had a fight in the far right corner. And Rick, it was to the left when you guys came out of the Zamboni entrance. It was in the corner to the left. And I was on the ice for that fight, and it was un-frickin' believable. You guys can Google it. Rick Tockett, Wendell Clark. I don't know if you guys ever fought again, but that was one of the best fights because Wendell beat the shit out of everybody he fought in my time with him pretty much. And that fight was, if you watch the fight, I think it's a draw. And after the fight, I go in and, you know, you go in to grab your teammates' gloves and go, attaboy, attaboy.
Teeth.
Yeah,
teeth. Go in and grab the
and
teeth.
Both of them looked at each other. But Rick and Wendell looked at each other and went, good fight. And I was like,
no way.
Oh, my God. You guys just kicked the shit out of each other. Would you say it was a draw, Rick? I mean, you can tell.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you guys pounded the piss out of each other. I mean, it was a great fight.
I went to dinner the night before with my buddies, and they're going – and you know, you're right, Rusty. You know, Wendell was lapping, you know, killing everybody that year. And like he, you know, he punches from his ankles, right? He swings. And I mean, you know, you're going to go after him. I'm like, I'm trying to eat my pasta. Guys, can I eat my pasta? He's like, I'm starting to get nervous now. Like they're saying, he's killing guys. He just beat up Bob Probert, blah, blah, blah. And I'm trying to eat the pasta. I'm like, hey, shut the fuck up, guys. Like, you know, so now I go home at night and at the hotel and I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm going to fight this guy. So anyways, the one thing with Wendell though, like he played the game really tough. He didn't look for it. Like he hit Markel really hard. That's why I went in. And it was just, see, that's the fight I like. It was out of passion because he, you know, he had a legal hit against Markel. I mean, he killed him. And Markel was probably our best player. So I went in to protect him. So that's the sort of stuff I didn't mind. But yeah, it was, I never fought Wendell again. It was almost like a mutual respect. Like we had played hard against each other, but we never fought again. It was just almost like, okay, we've had our go and that was it. So thank God, because he could swing that guy.
You and Wendell were the same player. You didn't like Clarkey was, hey, if we needed, he would go run guys.
Sure.
And then wait for what was going to happen after that. but he didn't go into the corner and drop his gloves and grab a guy, turn him around and fight. Like the fights were always for, there were a purpose or a reason, you know? And Rick, you were I think you were the same player as Clarke. I mean, you just played freaking hard. And if you hit somebody, you know, you hit Borja Salming that hard, Wendell would have been in there fighting you, right? I mean, it would have been the exact same thing.
Yeah. And that's, and I wouldn't have blamed him.
No.
And I wouldn't have blamed him. And, you know, if I would have hit Borja Salming in an you know, a bad position and he come and he grabbed me from the side, like, I get it.
No, but I was going to, sorry, I cut you off, but I think that's why we don't want fighting out of the game, is because when you have a player like Rick or Wendell who go and hit your best player, somebody's got to be there to respond for the best player who's not a fighter. Well, right. Otherwise, it's going to happen every single shift. I mean, it's just going to, you're done.
What did management tell you, talk or coach tell you when you came in and teamed up with Mario? Speaking of protecting guys, what was that whole scene like?
When I got traded there?
Yeah.
I think that and Koff got, poor Koff got traded for that. But they made that deal because Mario, you know, they're taking liberties against Mario, and Pittsburgh didn't really have a lot of tough guys. So that's why the reason I got traded there. And, you know, you try to, I remember we went to playing the Rangers against Messier, and they had Ty Domi and Chris King and all those guys. They had a tough team, and they were giving it to, you know, going after Mario. And I go, okay, well, I could fight. I could go after Ty Domi or Chris King, but what is that going to do? So we're in the corner. I, with my glove on, I punched Mess right in the face, and I said, "Let's go."
Oh no!
I said, "I'm gonna go after their best player." Like, you know, and you know, obviously, I'd have to answer the bell down the road, but that's the only way you're gonna, you know, if they're gonna go after Mario, I gotta go after their best player. You know,
right?
Craig Berube, the Stanley Cup winning coach for St. Louis, great guy, by the way, phenomenal guy. We played the Rangers one time, and they had this guy Dale Pierton, a real tough guy. And he was running around, and what Chief did, he went to the bench, he went to Brian Leach, you know, Leach, Rusty, great guy. And he goes up to Leach, goes, "Hey, Leach, I'm going to fight this clown on the ice here. I will fight him, but I'm going to fight you first. So if you don't settle him down, I'm going to knock your teeth out." And I swear to God, Brian Leach got out of the bench, went on the ice, and went to Dale Pierton and said, "Hey, settle down.
Yeah.
Stop." And Dale Pierton, who was, you know, a very tough guy, like he wasn't scared. He actually settled down that game because, you know, Brian Leach didn't want to get in a fight with Craig Berube. So there is some warfare to that, some psychological warfare to it.
Sure. That's a great move. How did you learn how to fight? What was your youth like? I mean, was it something you knew as a kid? Were you a big brawler in the schoolyard or what?
No, I think in junior, just I felt that I had that. I wasn't a great skater. I didn't have the greatest hands, so I figured I had to add another dimension. I worked on my game, but you know, it just kind of developed in junior, like, you know, protecting your teammates, you know, knowing that, hey, you're respected when you protect your teammates. And you know, the one thing with Jimmy, like, I was strong enough, like, I knew if I was in trouble, like, I wouldn't get hurt because I was strong enough to hold a guy. I always try to keep myself in good shape. So, you know, I fought the Bob Probert and those guys. And you know, listen, you don't want to go toe-to-toe with those guys, but if you had to hold them, I was strong enough to hold them where I wasn't going to get hurt. So I was pretty confident I was never going to get killed in a fight because I was strong enough to you know, I'm not saying I would have won every fight, but at least I could hold my own by just grabbing a guy and hold on to the guy if I had to.
Right. Rusty always said Cam Neely was the toughest guy he ever knew when he played hockey. And you were certainly one of the toughest. Rusty said no one would ever want to fight Cam Neely, but you did.
I fought him, and it was the same thing with Wendell. It was the first time I fought him, once and only time. Great fight. And I had to get traded there. And sad that I got to play with him for about a month, and then he retired. Hey, Rusty's really close with Cam, and became really, especially that time, I've lost touch with Cam. You know, like I said, you know, different teams and directions and stuff. But I hung around him a lot. He was buddies with that Dennis Leary.
Yeah.
Oh, I ever tell you that's a real good story.
The actor?
Yeah.
The actor. Hey, Rusty. Rusty and Cam, they know, you know, Rusty knows everybody too, right? So we went out one night and we're drinking, what's the name? Leary drinks Jameson.
And
Heineken. And Heineken.
Heineken with a shot of Jameson.
There you go. Nice. And so they came back.
I love the guy already.
I had a brownstone and I had rented this place. And I come on back to my place, and my girlfriend at the time, Lynn, and Dennis came back. I Paul, I think Paulina, Paulina, right?
Paulina Neely, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. They all came back, and you know, we're in, you know, we're buzzed to meet Cam, and you know, we're wrestling, and Neely or Dennis is kind of pushing Cam and pushing me. He goes, "You guys aren't that tough," and whatever he's drinking, and we grabbed him, we threw him, and his head hit my refrigerator, right?
Jesus.
And it dented my refrigerator, so I had him sign the refrigerator. That is weird.
Come on.
And, oh yeah, and I, you know what, I can't find that fridge. It's probably a collector's item, so it's Dennis Lee's head in my refrigerator. And he signed it. And I remember they left, and my girlfriend's yelling at me. I don't know French. I said, "Who cares? I mean, got Dennis Lear's autograph, man." He's in our fridge. So that was fun. That was a fun thing. Hanging out with him and Dennis Lear and Cam.
I can't believe we got to wrap this up. I thought we'd be half an hour, so we're already at an hour. I think you know what I like about these interviews, talk. I found a new co-host. Fantastic! fucking great. This is fucking great, pal. If you get fired, don't worry. I got a gig for you, pal. I got a gig for you.
Might be there about what, 6 months.
Yeah. what lies ahead for you, talk? How are you playing it out? 1 year at a time, 2 years? I always thought you'd be a great general manager one day.
You know what? I'm going to do this as long as I have the passion and I enjoy it. You know, I don't see myself doing this for the next 10, 15 years, Jimmy. There's other things I'd like to do, right now I do enjoy it. I enjoyed trying to make a kid better, him a better hockey player. That is a big thrill. But it's fun. It's fun. But once I start to, it becomes a real job where you're just punching the clock, I'm going to get out of it because it's not fair. It's not fair to the players. I know. Right. I've had some coaches you could just tell they're just punching the clock and you could just tell. So I don't want to be that guy.
Right.
And when he is retired, he's going to get his golf game together.
Oh, man.
Oh, he's a fucking last year. Well, he's a shitty golfer. Have you ever golfed with him?
Rick?
Oh,
Rick,
he's the worst golfer.
No,
ever,
hey, man. Fuck you. No.
Thanks, Rusty. But you know what, though? I have to play with Rusty. Because Rusty likes having a drink. He gets up there, has a cigar, and he swings. And he, you know, Rusty's a good golfer too, but he doesn't care. You know what I mean? He just has fun. I love playing with Rusty.
We played in the member guest last year at Gosser, so just over a year ago. And
Bruce, right?
My brother Bruce was my partner, and Rick played with Gretz. And Gretz had Jimmy, his caddy from Sherwood, and Tony, his caddy from Gosser. So, of course, he had to have two caddies, right? Because Gretz
and a bar on every Gretz second hole.
But Jimmy Gretz didn't have the heart to tell one of them that they couldn't work, so they both worked. And we teased those guys like a caddy for the caddy, you know, because the caddies end up having more fun than the freaking players. But 9-hole match, and I never laughed so freaking hard in my life because Gretz was on fire just giving it to his caddies.
Oh, no.
He hit a ball on...
Blame the winger. Blame the winger.
Gretz hits a ball on 16, long par 5, downhill, dogleg right. He hits it, and the ball's in the middle of the fairway, but his drive was up, pushed it right. And it hit the side of the hill and rolled into the middle of the fairway. And his caddies were so fucked up. They picked up his ball because he hit a provisional. And they're like, "Hey, we found this ball in the middle of the fairway." And Gretz goes, "What was it?" They're like, he's playing TaylorMade because
it's a 99 Wayne Gretzky ball.
99 Wayne Gretzky TaylorMade ball. And they're like, and they looked at it and they're like, "Oh, that must have been your first one." I mean, it was shit like that. The whole 9 holes, there was stuff going on. It was just so much fun.
The one thing with Rusty, like his brothers, like I connect like as much as I know Rusty and great guy, like but Bruce and Jeff, like I didn't know Jeff that well until those fantasy camps. I mean, I played against him and knew him in passing, but started really hang out with him in those Gretzky fantasy camps. I've never met a funnier family than him, Bruce, and Rusty. I mean, it was hilarious. Like, we used to hang, you know, you were there, Jimmy. You were to us. I mean, but Brucey, I haven't talked to Brucey in a while, but he was another guy. I used to love hanging with those guys.
Man. Quietly great guy. Insane.
Yeah, quietly insane. Insane. Yeah.
Quietly insane. Great guy.
Talk, this was great, man. I one of my favorite expressions, I'm gonna get sentimental, is, you know, what life's all about is where a guy can influence other people to reach a greater potential. And I've heard from some guys you play with, and they absolutely love you, man. Congratulations on a fantastic career, man. I know bigger things are coming for you, and I'm cheering for you, brother. I'm cheering for you, Rick.
Well, I appreciate I appreciate you guys reaching out, man, connecting the dots. You guys are awesome guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Hope to see you soon,
pal. Rick.
See you, boys.
See you later.
Okay, boys.
The Suspendables is a weekly hockey series with Jim Jerome in Edmonton and Russ Cortinel in L.A. Follow The Suspendables on Facebook and Twitter. Reach us at thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And, of course, we appreciate you sharing this podcast with your group of friends.